I'm glad we could be together again today. It's been an encouraging day to worship together, and I'm thankful for each one who has been here this morning and also this afternoon. This afternoon, we're doing something a little bit different than normal. Wanted to share some experiences that Mike and I had on our trip to India and try to help you get a better connection to the places and the people there so that we can all have a better understanding of the work that we're connected with. If I was in India, I would start by saying namaskaram. That was one of the few Telugu words that I learned. But what I want to show you are a lot of pictures, but this is a lot more than just a picture show. And the reason I will be showing you these pictures is so that you can feel like you are better connected to this place and to the people. And the intention is that God is glorified by everything that we say and everything that we do. There's a couple of places in the New Testament that show us examples of Christians doing things like this. At the end of Acts 14, Paul and Barnabas return to Antioch at the end of their first missionary journey. And it says that they sailed to Antioch in verse 26, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work that they had fulfilled. And when they arrived and gathered the church together, they declared all that God had done with them and how he had opened a door of faith to the Gentiles. And they remained no little time with the disciples. And so when Paul and Barnabas returned to Antioch, the church that had sent them off, they gathered together and talked about where they had been and what they had done to the glory of God. And that's our intention this afternoon as well. And then also in Acts 15, it says in verses 3 and 4 that after they left Antioch, they were sent on their way by the church, and they passed through Phoenicia and Samaria, describing in detail the conversion of the Gentiles, and brought great joy to all the brothers. And when they came to Jerusalem, they were welcomed by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they declared all that God had done with them. And so that's our intention and that's our focus this afternoon. I want to start by just giving some general overview things about India that I think are helpful to understand. India is a very large country. It's in fact recently surpassed China as the most populous country in the world. It's made up of 28 states and 8 union territories. The population is approaching 1.5 billion people, and so that means 1 out of every 6 people on the planet live in India, which is fascinating to me. It's very diverse, though. There are hundreds of languages and dialects that are spoken, and there's also diverse religious practices, which are primarily dominated by Hinduism, and I'll talk more about that in just a minute. But here I've zoomed in on the area that Mike and I visited, and we targeted this area because this is where the preachers that we're connected with live and work. And so you'll notice that there's the yellow state there of Karnataka, where Bengaluru is. That's where we flew into and where we started. And then we finished up in Telangana in Hyderabad. And so in between, we crossed through Andhra Pradesh. And so you can keep that in your mind as we talk more about the places and the things that we did there. This map also shows you different languages that are spoken in India. And if you can keep in mind where I just showed you on the last slide, that red area towards the bottom says Telugu. And so that's primarily the language of the people that we worked with. But there was also some Kannada coming from that yellow area. But mainly, our translations were in Telugu. And then here is a chart that just shows you the different religions in India. And as I mentioned, it's dominated by Hinduism. In fact, the government is a Hindu nationalist government led by Prime Minister Modi. And what that means is that there is a lot of government support for Hinduism. Hinduism is seen as, you know, very culturally significant because it's very Indian. And so as far as preserving the India that older generations want to preserve, that means preserving Hinduism. And so there are many different government policies that benefit Hindus. There are some anti-conversion laws that have been passed that make it very difficult to convert out of Hinduism. And those kinds of opposition are mainly in the, are more so in the north than in the south. And so where we were in the south was a little bit more open-minded to Christianity. But you'll notice that after Hinduism, Islam is second at 12.9%, and then Christians come in third at 2.4%, which seems like a very small number. But when you talk about 2.4% of 1.5 billion, you still end up with over 18 million people. And so Christians are a low percentage of the population, but there's still a good number of people who identify as Christian in various denominations. And so it's also not uncommon to see Catholic churches or other denominational churches. And here's just a map of where we started and where we finished. So Bangalore is down there at the bottom. So we spent our first week there, and then we made our way up to Gidalur over there in Andhra Pradesh, and we spent some time there with that church and some surrounding villages. And then we drove to Kurnool and caught a overnight train up to Hyderabad, and that's where we finished in the north, the northernmost part of this area. And so I'll talk about each of those places as we continue to go. I wanted to show you some pictures of some of the just sites around as you drive. It's very, very common to see Hindu temples in a lot of places, lots of Hindu themes in the architecture. You just drive by and you see these very intricate, detailed structures that people put a lot of effort into. And here's a close-up view of when you walk by one of these temples. You can see some of the images that are in there, and oftentimes there will be somebody attending them. And you can see that here on this slide down at the bottom. I suppose he's a priest or something like that. But these are images of Shiva on the left and Hanuman on the right. Just very common to see those kinds of decorations around. There's Shiva again on this slide, and various little altars where people will come by and offer different kinds of offerings. This gives you a little picture of the kinds of transportation that are around. So lots of big buses and trucks that are painted. I really liked the coloring on them. Lots of motorcycles weaving in and out of traffic. It's not uncommon to see children sleeping on motorcycles, so if you look close, there's two of them on that one. There's some people riding on a tractor here, so both of those are very common. This was a traffic jam that we got stuck in for about an hour. You can see the truck on the right was stopped on a very narrow pass, and the truck on the left was trying very hard to sneak past it. And wasn't sure if they would, but eventually they did. But that was just common, traffic jams like that. So felt right at home being from the Atlanta area. busy streets, lots of street vendors. Here you can see just pictures of like shops where people would be selling things. This man is selling bags of fish. So you could try that if you want it. And Lots of problems with litter and trash, unfortunately. And here on the right was a boy named Arif who I met. You can see he's got this bike with this cart, and he was going around collecting some of this trash, and he was selling it so he could make just a little bit of money. There's also some beautiful sites. We saw some architecture that goes back to the 1500s, and this was a place in Hyderabad. It was pretty out in the country. There were mountains and beautiful sunsets and herds of goats on the road. So we got around in vehicles like this. It's called an auto. It's a three-wheeled vehicle that taxi drivers would drive around. You'd see lots of them in the streets. This one was actually, well, not actually this one. It was a different one that was owned by a brother in Gittalur. And so he was able to transport us around, and that was very convenient. Ate lots of good food, so there's a snapshot of that. More on that later, some of you know. And also saw wild monkeys, which I thought was pretty cool. So, all right, so there's your immersion into India. Now let's talk a little bit more about some of the reasons why we were there, the people and the places. So like I said, we started in Bengaluru. We were there from Friday, February 6th until Thursday, February 12th. We stayed at this Catholic retreat center called Claret Nevis. And that was very helpful for us because we were able to be there and have some preachers come and meet with us without fear of there being any kinds of issues. Because of the environment there, we did have to take precautions to try not to get ourselves in trouble, to have our visa canceled, or even to be arrested. That's happened to people before. We came on a tourism visa, and so we did some tourism, and we also did some other things that we wouldn't have just announced publicly. And so the preaching and teaching was able to be done in a place like this without fear of problems coming up. But the first night, we met up with Balaswamy and Joshua Mahendrath. And so this is Balaswamy here on the left in the blue. Joshua is on the right sitting next to me. We ate some pani puri and got to know each other a little bit. And so that was a nice start to the trip. And then the first Saturday and Sunday, we spent time with the church there in Bengaluru. And so here's a picture of that group. This is where Balaswamy and Joshua split the preaching most of the time. So here's Mike giving a lesson that Balaswamy is translating. And then here is the outside of where they meet. So that pink building on the left is where the church meets for worship. it's just across the road from where Balaswamy and his family live. And you can see this tent area where they set up to feed us after we'd worshiped. But this is Balaswamy with his son Prabhu on the right side. And that's Prabhu's wife Akansha. And that's their son Jonathan. And Prabhu, I really like spending time with him. We had some really good spiritual conversations. He's actually training to be a pilot and planning to go do some training in New Zealand. But for now, he's still there in Bengaluru. And this is a picture of Balaswamy's whole family. So that's Balaswamy with his wife Sunita in the yellow shawl. You can see Prabhu there on the left. And then next to Mike is the third son, Preem. And what's interesting is that Balaswamy and Sunita have three sons. Their names are Mano, Prabhu, and Preem. And if you put all that together, it means God is love. So I thought that was neat. But Mano is actually studying in London, and he's in school there. And found out that he's doing some preaching there, and so I was happy to hear about that. And Prabhu and Preem also help out doing some preaching and teaching in Bengaluru. So this is Joshua and his wife Aruna on the right side, and that's also some of their family that are members of the church there in Bengaluru. And so then this is all of us together that afternoon. Balaswamy, Joshua, their wives, and Balaswamy's mother-in-law. And so I was curious about our connections to the church in Bengaluru. And so while I was there, I asked a lot of questions and made a lot of notes and tried to put them into a timeline that is understandable. But this is my understanding of just how we get to Mike Shields and Josh Carter going to Bengaluru. But in 1989, Balaswamy moved to Bengaluru, and he started getting serious about reading the Bible, seeking the Lord, wanting to do things the way that God wants him to do them. And in around 1996, he found a New Testament church that had 11 people. And that's the church that he started to work with and started to learn from and grow with. And then in 2002, Joshua, who I showed you a moment ago, was actually living in Kuwait. And he met an American pilot there named Marvin Dotson. And Marvin is the one who taught him and baptized him. And so then he started doing some Bible correspondence. And in 2003, two Americans named Bobby Holmes and Stan Cox made their first visit to Bengaluru. And I don't know much about them. I just know their names, but that's the names that were told to me. And then in 2004, Balaswamy and Joshua both connected in Bengaluru. And basically ever since then, they've been working together and preaching there at that church. So then between 2004 and 2008, Bobby Holmes, Stan Cox, and some other Americans made some annual visits. And that's how Justin Motz got involved. He was friends of some of those people. Then in 2019, Justin and Mike visited. And then just this past summer, Mike and Andrea visited. And then that all led to Mike and I visiting this year. So after we finished giving some lessons there to the church in Bengaluru, we moved on to the retreat center that I told you about earlier, where we had 15 different preachers come and stay the week with us. And we went through a series of classes with them. So you'll recognize some of the lessons that were taught because you've seen some of them. This is the triune God. This is actually an outline of Revelation, if you can read Telugu. We would always start with some singing and some prayers. And so here you see three of those preachers singing, leading a song at the beginning. This is what their songbooks look like, if you're curious. So no notes, just words. So you got to know what you're doing there. And then this is where we would eat. And the food was provided to us by the retreat center. And it was just very convenient to be able to sit and talk and get to know people in that kind of environment. Now, I did want to spend some time going through the lessons that we taught. This is why we were there, was to do things like this. And I think it's good for you to know what we talked about and why. But here is a schedule that Balaswamy put together based on all of the conversations that led up to our visit. We started by asking him for some input and for the different preachers that we would be working with for some input. We had lots of discussion, and then we settled on this plan. And so you can see here on the first 2 days, we did 1 Timothy, chapter by chapter, in the mornings. And the reasons for that were multiple. One, 1 Timothy is just a great book to study with anybody who wants to preach and teach. Chapter 1 is all about what preaching is all about. It's about the aim of our charge being love. Chapter 2 talks about the importance of prayer, especially in an environment where your government might be opposed to Christianity. Chapter 3 is about the qualifications of elders and deacons. Chapter 4, he goes on to talk about the importance of personal training and how if we're going to influence others, we've got to be serious about our relationship with the Lord ourselves. Chapter 5 gets into lots of technical discussion about widows and supporting widows. And then chapter 6 really focuses on the motivations for preaching and teaching and talks about how we need to think about greed and worldliness, things that are tempting for people everywhere, but maybe especially for people who are in a more needy kind of environment. So we talked about all those chapters. And the reason why we also wanted to do this study was to make it clear that the power is in the Word of God. The power is not in our words or our lessons or our presentations, that we can open God's Word and read it and understand it and discuss it together. And so that was just good practice for us. The other lessons, we had the righteousness of Christ, justification by grace, faith, or works. There were questions about paradise and heaven and the return of Christ. There were questions about the deity of Christ, which is a major conversation, I think, primarily because of the polytheistic background that many of them have. So in Hinduism, they believe in many different gods. And in Christianity, we believe in one God who is three persons. And so that's difficult for anybody to understand. But they had some particular questions that I think it was good for us all to discuss together. They also wanted us to talk about Revelation. So I gave an overview of Revelation in one class, whether that was wise or not, but we did that. Answered some questions from Revelation, talked about the uniqueness of the Bible and how we interpret the Bible, how we work together to be unified in doing what the Bible says. And then we left the last two blocks open for questions. And to me, that was my favorite part of the whole thing. And if I had to do it again, I would leave more time open for questions. But we just had open questions, and there were lots of questions about lots of things, and we talked for about 2 hours, and I found that very, very useful. So, when all was said and done, here is the 15 preachers who came. We started with the seven who we support, and then let them bring a few that they wanted to bring also. And so here is a picture of the seven men that we support here. So there's Shyam Babu Panameli in Hyderabad, Gurum Babu in Gittalore, Yeramala Balaswamy in Bengaluru, Nagaswara Rao in Chiruvo Madhavaram, Sekar in Chennai, Praveen Kumar in Raichur, and Seaman in Mysuru. And after spending a week in these studies and conversations, I still wish that I knew them better. I still wish I knew them more. In many cases, communication is an issue. Some of them speak better English than others. Some of them speak very little at all. And so it takes some time to get to know people. But at least I feel like I've met these people, and they're not just names on a page. And I hope that you seeing them too helps you to feel like you know them a little bit better. At the end of the week there in Bengaluru, we were able to give some Bibles away. So there were at least a couple of brethren here that wanted to contribute towards that effort. And so we were able to bring some money over and have Bibles purchased and give a number of Bibles to each preacher who visited that they could take back with them and share with the people where they come from. And so after that, we moved on to Gittalore. So Friday morning, we drove to Gittalore, and this is where Gurum Babu preaches. And so here on the picture on the left, you'll see Gurum Babu there in the white shirt in the middle. That's his wife, Swarna, on the right side, and that's her nephew also. They don't have any children, but that's her nephew. And then also in the picture, you'll see Balaswamy on the left, another preacher named Manish, and then in the red shirt on the right side was another preacher named Pradeep. And they hung out and spent some time with us while we were there too. So the first night that we were in Gittalore, we went to a village called Nalaguntla. And I really liked doing this. There was just different people who were all living together in this small village. And it started with a small crowd, but as we got started, just more and more people joined and seemed to be a lot of people who were really paying attention and interested to hear what we were talking about. So some of these people came from Gittalore, but most of them lived in this village. And here's the church building where the church meets in Gittalore. And so after that Friday night, on Saturday, we had a couple of lessons with the group in Gittalore. And mostly it was preachers who came from the surrounding area. And I don't think I really knew it was going to be like this, but when we went to these different places, the local preachers would invite all of the preacher friends that they had, and they would come together. And so we had 20, 30, 40 of these preachers show up. But there was also others who would join here on this rug on the left side. By the time we were finished, it was filled up with people, and that's usually where women and children would sit. So it was a good blend of the church there and preachers coming to hear the studies. This lady here, standing next to Babu, is named Madhavi, and she had a huge smile on her face right before I took the picture. But this is the traditional posture, I think, of photos there. But she was recently converted from Hinduism, and so it was fascinating to hear her story and the journey that she had come to. But she had been studying with Babu and had been converted from Hinduism and is working in a government hospital and a member of the church there in Gittalur. So then, after that Saturday in Gittalur, we planned to go to a village called Konapele, which is the last village. It is the last village before you go into the dark, deep jungle. And so we were planning to go there, and I considered just simply telling you that the Spirit prevented us. But some of you know that there's more to that story than that. But like Paul was prevented by the Spirit to go where he wanted to go at one point, we found ourselves prevented to go to Konapele. I was already having some stomach problems, but I believe this little cup of coffee that I bought from a street vendor is what did me in. And on the way to this village, I had to ask them to pull the car over. And funny thing about me is when I get sick to my stomach, I also get very lightheaded sometimes. And so I remember going to the side of the road to do what needed to be done. And then my next memory is waking up in a ditch with people dumping water on me and shaking me. And so I still am picking out some of the thorns from my hands. But I did pass out, and there were a couple of other stops along the way. Suffice it to say, it was a very humbling experience for me. But I'm very thankful for the good brothers who took care of me, because it's kind of funny now, but it was kind of scary then. And so Mike did a lot more than he signed up for, and Balaswamy and Gurum Babu and even our driver, Varma, just took great care of me. So eventually, Balaswamy talked me into going to the hospital. I had gotten very dehydrated and very weak. And thankfully, there was a hospital right around the corner from our hotel that had been open for 1 week. So they had 1 week of practice before I showed up. And Katie talked me out of including the picture of me hooked up to the IV. So there's the outside of it. But I had to go and get IV antibiotics and fluids. And then the next day I went back and got another round of those and had to rest for about a day before we were able to resume our plans. But these are the men that I have to thank for taking care of me during that time. Mike and Pradeep and Gurum Babu. And I have to say, Balaswamy was just such a great caretaker. He never left my side. He wouldn't even want to let go of my arm. He wanted me to sleep with the door open, and he slept outside of my room so that he could check on me during the night. He was just very, very kind, and I am forever grateful for that. Got us some bread and bananas to eat and coconuts to drink. And then there's Varma down at the bottom. And Varma, he was just a hired driver. He wasn't a brother that anybody knew, but he took great care of me. The next day, he came to the hotel where we were staying just to check on me, not because, you know, he was getting any money out of it, just because he was concerned. And then when we resumed our travels, we went to some other places, and he continued to come into the assemblies with us and listen to the preaching and the teaching. And so I hope one day that I read in Babu Gurum's report that Varma has become a Christian. I'd love to hear that. But after we did recover from that, on Monday, we went to a little town near Gittalore called Kumbum, and this is where they met, here in this building. And again, we had a group of preachers that came. We presented some of the same types of lessons that we knew were relevant to them. After that, we went over to the preacher's house, which for some reason is titled Greenland. I don't know if you can see that at the top. I asked him why, and he told me green was his favorite color. And so it's good enough for me. So after Kumbum, we went to Greenland. And at Greenland, we ate with Samuel and his wife. Samuel is the preacher there, and he actually lost his legs in a train accident years ago. He gets around on prosthetics, as well as a three-wheeled motorcycle that the brethren have helped provide him with so he can get around to different studies and things. So here we are eating at his house, and you'll see Varma there joining with us in the meal. And then the last night in Gittalore, some of the brethren from the church came by the hotel, and I really enjoyed this time. You know, they were checking on us. Mike had been a little sick also. But here you see Balaswamy, and then Pradeep, and then Babu. And then that man in the striped shirt is Madhavi's husband. His name is Shiva. And he's not yet become a Christian yet, but he's been coming with Madhavi to worship. And I thought it was great that he came and spent a little more time with us. And then there in the yellow, that's Babu's wife, Swarna, again. And they came, and they just wanted to spend a little more time with us before we left. And we spent about 2 hours just talking with each other, and we prayed together and told them farewell. So after that, we went to the train station in Kurnool and waited several hours for a train that was a sleeper car. And so these are the cots where we slept, and that brought us to Hyderabad, our final destination, early on Wednesday morning. So we made it to Hyderabad on Wednesday, February 18th, and we spent our time with the church there. So you might recognize the man in the middle here. That's Shambhu Panameli. He was one of those seven preachers who came at the beginning of the trip to Bengaluru. But this is where he lives and where he preaches with the church here in Hyderabad. This is his family. His wife is next to him, and then his two daughters also. And then those are his granddaughters that are surrounding us. Really lovely family. Really enjoyed spending time with them. And then that's one of his sons-in-law standing there next to Mike. And so this is the entrance to where they meet for worship. You can see the sign that they had for our visit. Here's Shambhu on the top of the church building with the baptistry that he created. And so there's so if you want to get baptized, you got to climb up the steps onto the top of the church building, but there's water there for that purpose. And so then we gave a couple of lessons there in Hyderabad. Again, we had a lot of preachers that came from different places, as well as members of the church there. The second day, we had more of the women and children. You can see them here in this picture. And then here's a group photo with all of them at the end. And so that is a summary of our trip and the things that we did and the places that we went. And I wanted to share, just in closing, some challenges that the brethren there are facing. and some of my own reflections about those challenges. And by no means do I think that I'm an expert or that I have all the solutions, but after one visit, I do feel a little bit more familiar with some of those things. And I think it's good for us to be aware of as we continue to try to help and encourage people in places like this. But first of all, I was impressed by the amount of opposition that Christians face there. It's cultural, it's familial, and it's religious. So with a Hindu nationalist government, there's a lot of pressure to be Hindu. There's a lot of incentive to be Hindu. And if you come from a Hindu background, it's very difficult to convert out of that. And so that comes sometimes just from the general culture, sometimes from family, and sometimes a more religious angle. There's also a lot of denominational influences, and I'm sure that's true everywhere. I know it's true here. But particularly in both doctrine and practice for what people perceive as being the Church of Christ. I noticed that for many people, the term Church of Christ has become a very denominational term. There's a lot of sectarian thinking, which bothers me here too, but I felt very aware of it there. And there are a lot of people who claim to be a quote-unquote Church of Christ preacher, whatever that means. And it's very easy for somebody to just declare themselves a Church of Christ preacher, start to meet with one or two families, and then start seeking support. And it just creates a difficult environment sometimes because of that. I noticed that there was a real need for robust Bible study and teaching. You know, there's always got to be a balance of talking about issues and speaking to issues, as well as teaching the Bible and just giving a general understanding of Scripture. And one thing that Mike and I noticed was that Bible classes didn't seem to be a huge tradition there. There was a lot of sermons, a lot of preaching, but not as much just going through the Bible chapter by chapter. And so that's why we tried to teach 1 Timothy the way that we did. But I would like to see some more emphasis on just general Bible study and teaching there. I think that would be good for the brethren. We also noticed that there's a real need for functional local church leadership. We never found any churches that had elders. We asked around, and we heard that there were some here and there, but it seems like a very rare thing that a church actually has elders and deacons, which, you know, everybody's got to do the best they can with what they've got. but in the absence of elders and deacons, oftentimes a church kind of reverts to this old single pastor model, where the preacher is the de facto pastor, elder, overseer of the whole thing. And in any place that that can be avoided, I think it would be good to work towards what the Bible shows us about having local church leadership. It'd be good for the work in general. And then finally, there's a real need for prudence in both offering and maintaining support. I mentioned that the environment there can be challenging. And part of it is it can create a very competitive atmosphere for support. And so I know of a case or two where, you know, one preacher receives some support, and then maybe he receives some more support that makes other people jealous, or maybe somebody else receives support that makes other people jealous. And it's just, it can be a very competitive kind of atmosphere of people seeking support. And if there is not wisdom and prudence in all of that, foreign money can create more harm than good. You know, if the perception is that if you declare yourself a part of our tribe and you send out letters and you just get support from people, then it creates an environment where that just happens more and more. And our goal is not to get people to just simply agree with us, but it's to find sincere people who love the Lord, who are wanting to share the message of the gospel with others, and to be able to try to help and support them as much as we're able. And so a relationship like that, it takes some time, and it takes some consistent communication. And I know that both Bill Mitchell and Mike Shields put in a lot of effort to keep up with these men that we support. But it's not just these 7 men in India. There's also men in Africa and in the Philippines, and also men here domestically. And that's a large task to undertake, to try to have good relationships with these people that we partner with. And so I'll just say, I think good stewardship involves both discretion and prudence as much as it involves being generous with our giving. We want to do all that we can to support the preaching of the gospel, but we also want to try to have good relationships with the men that we support and try to support men who are doing the work, not just men who send out letters looking for support. And so that takes some wisdom, it takes some prayer, and it takes some effort. Okay, I'll finish with a couple of verses. I know that there are some challenges in a place like this, challenges that others have told me about before, but now I've experienced in person. But no matter what the challenges are, we ought to keep in mind the mission that Jesus Christ has given us. Some of Jesus' last words before he went up into heaven to his disciples were to go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And so that's why we want to support the preaching of the gospel in places like India. And that's why Mike and I are both very thankful that you sent us to strengthen our connections with brethren who are doing this work. And what we're trying to do is to help make disciples of Jesus, not to spread the borders of any denomination, not to spread the borders of the Lawrenceville Church, but to go and to help people follow in the teachings of Jesus Christ, because that's what he's commanded us to do. And then finally, I thought about these verses several times while I was there. Revelation chapter 7, verses 9 through 12 shows us a picture of all of those who will be in heaven one day. And it shows us a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, with palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." And I think as much as we are able to keep this picture in our minds here and now, we'll be all the more motivated to make connections with our brethren in different places, in different countries, in different tribes and peoples and languages. And so, despite the challenges, this is well worth our efforts. And whatever we do moving forward, if this means that there are more visits, or if we continue to think about ways that we can get to know these people better, that would be well worth our time, because one day we'll be with them forever in heaven. And it's by the grace of God that we share in that hope. So all of that being said, thank you for listening to that report. I hope that it's encouraging to you. If you have any further questions, I know Mike and I both would be happy to talk to you about those. But this brings us to the close of this lesson this afternoon. And as it is our tradition, we do want to finish with an invitation song. And so maybe there's been something said in all of this that has softened your heart to make a decision that you need to make. And so if there is somebody here this afternoon who's not yet become a Christian, or if there's somebody who has some spiritual needs that you want to share with the group so that we can help you in some way, we want to give everyone the opportunity to respond to the invitation of the Lord. And so if you'd like to make those needs known, you can come to the front while we stand and sing.